Hopefully this is like a simple and intuitive method that can hopefully like solve some problem in, say, like quantum many-body physics, and hopefully QFT as well. So the motivation of this work is that we want to solve system with large degrees of freedom, which usually have like very interesting emergent behavior. But in order to see them, we actually need to solve them in strong coupling a lot of the times. And to say that we like what method we have at hand, we could either like start with the Hamiltonian or some action, either from QFT or lattice, and do simulation. And the simulation method, there are like many of them. We could do Monte Carlo, we can do like variational method. And these methods, well, so they work great. But say fundamentally, these are approximation methods. So like in the IR, we don't really know what we're supposed to get. And to make it worse, a lot of times we want to test physics in the thermodynamic limit, and small errors sometimes can obscure the physics. So we want some method that can overcome this this issue. So if we don't have to make any approximation, that would be great. And there is a method that doesn't require approximation, which is bootstrap. So bootstrap is kind of like top, bottom up, if we consider direct simulation as top down. So we usually start with like a known IAR picture. So we don't have to know everything, but we need to know the framework, like either it's a CFT or we start with some S matrix of a QFT. And we have a finite number of parameters that kind of parameterizes the part of the solution space that we care about. And the parameters satisfy some self-consistency condition, which are known as the crossing equations. And the symmetries and equation of motions, whatever that can be applied to them. And these conditions will be rigorous. And we just use those self-consistency conditions to rule out possibilities of these parameter space. And what's left will be like our target parameter space. And if the bound is strong enough, we kind of solve the theory, the problem. But then the downside of bootstrap is a lot of the times, it's not very easy to be very specific of what model we're looking at in the UV. So a lot of times we're wrestling with assumptions, because if we don't make any assumptions, then the bound we derive from just purely the self-consistency condition will be too general. But the moment we start making assumptions, we lose the rigorousness. So a desired method, hopefully, at the end of the day, we can achieve would be something that both have the full information of the UV and the full information or the full parameter space in the IR, and we'll be using self-consistency conditions, so no approximation will be made. And in general, it's very difficult to consider such a method, but like for quantum mechanics or quantum many-body physics, there is this method that we know as quantum many-body bootstrap or quantum mechanical bootstrap. And today my talk will be split in three parts. So first I'll give a very schematic introduction of what this method is and what does it look like. And then I'll talk about how to use it to give some bound on quantum many-body, the many-body ground state. And then the third part will be like, take a step forward, let's bootstrap the gap of the many-body systems. So the first introduction part. The basic ingredient of quantum mechanical bootstrap is the positivity of probability in a quantum mechanical system. So and that positivity is given by this moment problem, which states as following. So suppose I'm given a series of numbers from x to zero all the way to like x to the k, and for arbitrary large k, these numbers if I claim these numbers are drawn from some probability distribution or like from some quantum mechanical system or some statistical system, the requirement of the positivity of the probability distribution is equivalent, or it's equivalent to the fact that the moment matrix, or also known as the Hankel matrix, written like this form, is positive semidefinite for arbitrary large k. And this is a sufficient and necessary condition. But if we do a truncation on k, this condition becomes a necessary condition in the sense that if the probability is positive, then this matrix is a positive for arbitrary large k. But for finite k, the positivity does not prove the positivity. The positivity of this matrix does not prove the positivity of all of the probabilities. So, but it can be serve as a necessary condition. So what we do is that we write this matrix to the best of our knowledge and utilize all of the self-consistency condition, including symmetry, equations of motion derived from some action or some Hamiltonian, and use a positivity to give constraints on the corresponding system. And let's see how it works for a simple system as simple as a 0 plus 1 quantum mechanical system. Let's start with this model called the anharmonic oscillator. So it's just a simple harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian deformed by a quartic interaction term. I don't want to say it's not exactly soluble, but definitely this model is like much trickier to solve exactly than the simple harmonic oscillator. So it can be used as a test. So we do know how to compute all of the energy eigenvalues and expectation values to like arbitrary precision very quickly. And we'll just use this to see like how good the bootstrap can give, result the bootstrap can give us. So the zeroth ingredient of a quantum mechanical bootstrap is to write down this moment matrix, which are given by the powers of the expectation of the powers of x. And we're assuming these expectations are drawn from the state that is an energy eigenstate with energy E. And we don't know what E is. We keep that as an unknown. And the first ingredient is the positivity, which says the matrix is positive semidefinite. And the second ingredient is that we want to further restrict the space of these solutions. And we use the equation of motion since we know what the Hamiltonian is. So since we have the Hamiltonian and that we require we assume these matrix elements are drawn from the energy eigenstate, then if we insert a Hamiltonian in these expectation values, then we get the energy eigenvalue E. So we can just do it for arbitrary operators. We can just multiply H on the left or on the right, and on one hand we get like some composite operators. On the other hand, we get the energy eigenvalues, and we can just use the equations. Basically, we had two types: Hamiltonian commuting with an operator. Those result operators don't have any expectation values, and if we just insert Hamiltonian somewhere, we get energy eigenvalue. And these two equations, it turns out, is sufficient to for this simple problem. It's sufficient to give us an equation relation that relates all of the matrix, all of the expectation values to x squared matrix element, or x squared expectation values through these this recursion relation. And then from, the equations of motion, these blue equations. Yeah, so we know what the Hamiltonian is, and we take, say, O is x, and we just plug it in. We get two set of equations, and we can do it for arbitrary x. And we can have like x to some power times p to some power, etc. And then using all of these equations in the end, we will get this simple relation. And now our only unknown are the energy eigenvalue and the x squared expectation value. So if we plug in these two numbers, we get the numerical matrix, and we can just explicitly check if it's positive. And if it yes, then that means this result or this solution with that x squared and e will be possible. Of course, it's not saying that it's the true solution, but it's possible. But if the matrix is not positive, then that means this eigenstate e or x squared, like either one of them, is impossible. And we can just like make a plot. So scan all of these values, and this model or this work is first done by Han, Hartnell, and Kruthoff in 2020. And for this particular Hamiltonian with coupling constant 1, they get this island of allowed values of E and the x squared expectation value, which seems to shrink exponentially as we take k to be larger and larger. And this is like, we didn't specify that we're looking at the ground state. So actually, outside of this plot, there are further islands that correspond to this first excitation, second excitations, etc., and they're also shrinking.
What happens if lambda is negative?
Actually, haven't tried, but you probably don't get very good bounds, because I don't know. It's either you don't get good bounds, or you just rule out all possible values. Because then I guess you will violate unitarity for any solution, I guess. Yeah, I'm not really sure. Yeah.
Yeah, let me make sure. What do you mean by lambda is a quartic coefficient, right? Yeah.
The quartic interaction.
Yeah, then there, I guess there is no solution.
Is there?
Yeah, because this kind of bootstrap method, it cannot detect the scattering state. If there is no bound state, no writable bound state, then there is no solution at all, whatever the E is.
But is it like, I'm not exactly sure like what this method will give us. Because we can imagine that we're actually in a potential that has a very large quartic term, a very large negative quartic term, and a very tiny sixth power.
Yeah, I haven't tried it, but yeah. You can think of the h equals p squared. This is no potential at all.
Yeah.
So what you will get p to the p squared expectation equals 0.
Yeah.
Then as a result, this state has no solution at all. I mean, just a totally flat potential.
Yeah. Totally flat.
The same thing will happen here.
Okay. So maybe it's actually pretty delicate. Like if we don't have any sixth power to bound it, then we can simply rule out the entire parameter space.
Yeah, you can also.
But I'm not so sure of that.
Matrix quantum mechanics. So for matrix quantum mechanics, you will have a lambda, critical lambda, that beyond that, it is negative value. Beyond that, there is no solution at all. So for finite, and this is not in the larger limit, I think the lambda C is just here.
Okay.
And
make
sure
the
sample.
So what I case where the potential has both bound space and also scattered space.
Yeah, so it can only the bound state, the normalizable
bound state,
not the delta
normalizable. Why won't the eigenvalues in the matrix space just go to the imaginary axis in that case, right? If you have negative lambda.
You mean some imaginary number of
the moments would be imaginary.
The moments? Well, there is some issue. I think.
Sorry, is the question of like some coupling be imaginary?
Yeah,
I didn't hear.
If lambda is negative, you can still get good results by rotating the contour. I don't know if this method would detect something.
But I don't know if the probability will still be positive, right? So this matrix needs to be positive, and that gives us all the bounds. And if we get some negativity, then it rules it out. I'm not sure if it's like we immediately rule out all of the solutions, or is it like this method doesn't tell us anything about it. I'm not exactly sure which one is the case. Yeah. Yeah. So far we've only considered spectrum with only bound states for this quantum mechanical problems. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, this is like roughly how it works for a quantum mechanical problem. And if we wanted to apply it to many-body physics, we need to do a few generalizations. The first, we'll be looking at the spin chain on the thermodynamic limit, and we'll have a generalized moment matrix, which is just a quadratic form of all possible operators. And if we want to truncate it to a finite matrix, then we select a subset of operators. Say that we restrict the operator to have support only on, say, L continuous, L neighboring sites, something like that. And then if we're looking at solutions for the thermodynamic limit, then the expectation value of energy will diverge for general problems. And I don't want to say it's impossible to avoid this problem, but for now, I'll just like simply naively discard any equations that has an explicit reference to the energy eigenvalue itself, because it's something that diverges. Maybe through some careful cancellation, maybe at the end of the day we can keep some of these equations. But right for now, let me just not look at them. But we still have the other equation, which is Hamiltonian commuting with any operator, like the commutator between the Hamiltonian and any operator, the result will have its zero expectation values. And these are satisfied by any static states and any linear combination of them. So immediately we'll have a problem, like what does it say, like where does it say it has to be in the ground state? Actually, it doesn't. So we need some additional requirement. So we actually have two choices. One is, by definition, if we scan all the parameter space for all of these that satisfy all of these conditions, the equation of motion, positivity, and we try to find the solution with the lowest possible energy or energy density, if we assume a translation invariance, then that naturally gives us a lower bound on the energy density, on the ground state energy. Or we can try to be smarter, and actually, so in these recent papers, they propose that this condition, which is a modification of the moment problem, is this additional condition that is only true for the ground state. So if we also use this positivity, we'll isolate the ground state.
Question?
Yes?
Yeah, we need to assume that the ground state energy is zero.
No, I'm not assuming that. But
where does this condition come from?
You think the right answer would be generating something
from state? So, one way to see it is that you can insert a complete set of basis state eigenstates, and you will get like quadratic forms of matrix element times e zero. E n minus e zero, because on one side we have the ground state. And that thing is positive, so the whole thing is positive. So this is one way to see that this is true for ground state. And there's no assumption on the ground state energy, just that it's the lowest. Yeah.
But here, O has to be taken over all possible operators, including
other ones. Well, if we start with a local operator, then this algorithm, this H comma O, gives us another, not like that local, but like it's a bit fatter, but it's still like not like entirely non-local. So it's still within some range.
Yeah.
So, And we can truncate, yeah. The equality is, yeah, so the, if we, for the ground state itself, this is a matrix that is positive. Well, by using this condition, right? So far we've talked about the moment problem, which doesn't say it's the ground state. And this condition only satisfied that this positivity is only satisfied if the state is the ground state. If it's the first excitation state, then this positivity is not satisfied. Because in the spectral decomposition, you will see a term that is negative. So you can't prove it's positive. Yeah.
So this is assuming by applying orbital O to some answer state and may get no energy. But we really need to check all possible operators, including non-local ones.
You will get a bound if the like. So first, like at any truncation, you will get a bound. But if the basis is not good enough, say that really you would, I think the method really requires some like operators that support in a very large number of sites, and then you use local operators, then you get a bound that's not very good. Yeah. And that's actually what we have. Yeah. And then let's just see how it works. In real life, we start with this simple toy model, transfer field easing model on 1D infinite spin chain, given by this local Hamiltonian with nearest interaction. And we have the moment matrix given by the Kronecker product of like a submatrix of each site. And this basically is just a Pauli matrix on one Pauli matrix square, right? So. And then we truncate to include only operators that have support in like in the range L. And we require the positivity of this matrix. And we use the simpler condition, which is just minimize the energy density given by one term in this infinite sum, because we assume translation invariant. And it turns out at for now, the equation, the Hamiltonian equation of motion is not necessary for this problem specifically. We'll talk about equation of motion later. But just these conditions can give us bound, lower bound on the energy density. So this is the bound as a function of the coupling H. For this model, particularly H is equal to 1 is the critical point. And we do see that the bound actually converges slowest here. But away from h is equal to 1, we have the gapped phase. And the convergence, well, there's some convergence. It seems to be better than the critical point. And generally, if we increase L, we approach the exact solution. And we're never supposed to rule out the exact solution. So we're just like approaching it at some rate. And intuitively, we'll expect this rate to be like e to the mass gap, e to the minus mass gap times L, L being the range of operators we're looking at. And at the critical point will be like some power law of L. So the natural problem is local operators really don't converge that fast. And can we make it faster? Because if we really want to study, get a good bound, we need large L, but then the number of operators we need to include in this matrix will be exponentially more. So here,
just a comment about this model.
Yes?
I think if I consider 5 chain,
yeah.
If H is small, if the length of the chain is even,
yeah.
This gap, if it's odd, this gap is.
Yeah.
Some strange feature of this model.
I agree, but the condition is allowing actually both finite solution and thermodynamic solution because it only uses the it only uses the self-consistency condition between operators within some range, right? So it doesn't see the boundary condition. And that's why it's actually shrinking at this power of L, because it's basically ruling out solutions that, so it's actually ruling out finite range solutions with spin numbers less than L. And then as we increase L, we rule out more and more of the solution, and we're keeping only the thermodynamic limit solution. Yeah. And then the thermodynamic limit solution is always in the allowed region. Yeah. And the gapped ones might be ruled out at some point. Yeah. So here, the proposal, actually, there is a previous work already studied this. Like, we can borrow the MPS ansatz from the variational ansatz, from the variational problem method. And the MPS is just it's a variational ansatz that parameterizes a state by multiplying a matrix to each site and then multiply all of these matrix together, forming a matrix product state. And the reason why people think that, the reason why this is a good parameterization of the ground state is that it captures the feature of the ground state in the gapped phase. The ground state has error law integument entropy, which is if you take this chain and then you take, say, half of the chain and then take a partial trace, you will get some entanglement entropy. And the entropy is proportional to this dimension of this red line, the bond, we call it bond dimension, or the dimension of this matrix. And so basically, the take-home message is that we don't need to look at all of the states which are which have exponentially many. We only need to look at states that satisfy error law, and those are parameterized by the MPS. And the ground state is inside that parameterization. And if we borrow this setup in the quantum mechanical bootstrap, we can look at the positivity of the matrix of the reduced density matrix given by these MPS ansatz, right? So we take the state which has finite support, which has support on some finite set of sites, and we take outer product, and we take the expectation value, and we take all of these expectations and form a matrix. And that thing is supposed to be positive, because it's basically saying that we take a state, and we partial trace out some of the sites, and the remaining stuff has to still have a positive norm. Yeah. And now we've reduced the dimension of this problem to some exponential 4 to the L to something roughly d squared. I put a lot of things under the rug. Like this paper who studied this problem has some setups that I didn't explain. But at the end of the day, the problem scales as L to some power instead of 4 to the L. And as a result, we can study much larger L without sacrificing the accuracy of the bound. And what they have is that they successfully take L to be like order 100, and they got bound that converges at to say like 10 to the minus 5 level. The bound dimension is less than 10, yeah. Something like that. And this is like far better than if we use all possible local operators and stay at say 4 sites or 5 sites. So this is one of the things we do want it to apply in all of these future quantum mechanical bootstrap studies. But after all, the previous paper, this one that gives this nice result, only give a lower bound on the ground state energy. It'll be far more interesting if we're able to obtain rigorous bounds on generic observables. Right, so Now, we actually cannot just use this condition that the ground state energy is the lowest, or we cannot just write down this positivity and just minimize the energy. We actually need to incorporate this additional positivity condition proposed by these two recent paper. So in order to use this, since it actually refers to the Hamiltonian itself, then it turns out that the equation of motion now is necessary. So we need to also use the Hamiltonian, the equation that says the Hamiltonian commutator with some operators will give us operators that have zero expectations. So we incorporate both of these, and using a similar setup, now we're just trying to test the upper bound and lower bound on some local operators, say, for example, sigma x expectation value. And we also get bounds on both sides. And it seems to be improving and approaching the exact solution at larger and larger L. Of course, right now our computation is limited, so we can basically stop at L is equal to 4 without optimization, or without optimization of this method. So the next question will be like, okay, so can we combine it with MPS and also push L to be much larger? So this is an ongoing work. So far we haven't really found a good way of doing this. The reason of that is that the MPS relaxation doesn't really play well with the equation of motion. We studied the reduced density matrices given by these MPS states, but then if we act the Hamiltonian on these states, it moves us out of this space. So basically, that means our basis operators or basic matrices will get bigger and bigger as we include more and more equations of motion. And so very, very naively, we didn't really know a good way to use the equation of motion in this MPS relaxation. But we study kind of like a hybrid method instead. So hybrid method, it's the idea is the following. Okay, so before we are able to use the MPS together with the equation of motion, let's just restrict all of these equation of motion, perturbative positivity, this additional positivity constraints, to a much smaller truncation, say L prime at 3 or 4-ish. And then we do want to increase the number of operators we're looking at using the MPS and that. So we just include them without using the equation of motion for a much larger range of operators. And we just like put all of these conditions to the best of our knowledge together. So this is the setup. I don't want to explain the detail of the semi-definite program problem, but at the end of the day, we get a bound. The red part of this plot. So this is keeping the L prime, which is the lower truncation, to be the lower truncation, the range of operators which we use all the additional positivity and equation of motions to be the same as L is equal to 4 full setup before. And then we add some MPS operators, or like so some matrix product operators for L greater than 4, and then stop at L is equal to 10. And it seems to be, it does improve the result. And if we look at like different H, so at away from the critical point, say h is equal to 1.6, we'll have upper bound and lower bound both in. So starting from L is equal to 4, it's actually it keeps improving all the way to like L is equal to 10, getting much closer to the exact answer. But at the critical point, the upper bound doesn't really change much. It changes a little bit, but actually not visible on the plot. For the expectation value near or at the critical point. So the conclusion for this part would be, It's definitely improving the problem, because if we had to, like, if we can't use MPS at all, then the full problem will be like 4 to the 10 by 4 to the 10 matrix, and we'll be doing semi-definite programming on that large matrix, and it's going to be really hard. And MPS relaxation drastically reduces to like order 100 or 1,000. And we'll be able to improve the result on the, like, away from the critical point. But at the critical point, it seems like that this method itself is insufficient. And we do need to find a way to incorporate equational motion and MPS. And hopefully there exists a method. Yeah, so it just, at this moment, it's unclear how to do it.
Question?
Yes?
How do you input the information that the system is infinite?
I guess I don't have a condition that says the system has to be infinite. So generally, it will be allowing the solution from the finite system with, say, periodic boundary condition. Yeah.
I see.
We're using all of the self-consistency condition between operators that are separated at most L sites apart, right? So if you, and we're assuming translation invariance, so we can kind of like rule out the open boundary condition solutions. But for periodic boundary conditions, there's like, as long as there are more operators than we're studying in the bootstrap setup, then we cannot rule out that solution. So that's why we're expecting all of the bound will shrink at this powers of L, or like e to the minus ml, because that's the how the finite range solution approaches the thermodynamic limit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Given L, what is the system size?
So what do you mean by system size here? It will be ruling out. It will rule out all of the solution with finite system size less than L.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm asking these questions because in some lattice models, the thermodynamic limit doesn't exist. The physics depends on how we approach infinite.
I agree. So in that case, this setup will allow all of them. All possible ways that you can approach the thermodynamic limit. And it will be very interesting to see if we can figure out some additional constraints, kind of like enforcing some information on the boundary. That would be great. Yeah.
Actually, the transversal atom model, I don't think it has thermodynamic limit. If the eigencoupling is positive.
Which phase is it? Is that is the broken?
So if
the thermal phase.
The system size is even, then it's just up down.
Yeah.
Two constants.
Yeah.
It's off. Then there will be one spin which cannot satisfy the minimal energy condition, and this spin can be put anywhere.
Yeah.
So there's a mass degeneracy.
Yeah.
When at perturbation, this degeneracy will be lifted, and there will be a gap smoke. So the physics is pretty different for even all system sizes.
Yeah. But I guess, let me see. I guess the setup is only allowing periodic boundary condition, but I guess the things will change for like an even or odd number of sites, right? So for observables that are sensitive to this difference, we'll probably see that the bound does not shrink to a point, but a range satiated by two extremes, yeah. Okay, so finally, we want to take a break from the ground state energy and go to something much harder than that. We'll be asking, can we bootstrap the gap of a quantum mechanical system? So to achieve that, we will further generalize our setup. So we've been looking at the moment matrix, and we'll be only using the positivity of the moment matrix, but we can actually do more. We can insert a complete set of eigenstates between the two operators in this moment, and we'll have infinite sum in the eigenstate. And the right hand side is positive semidefinite matrix. If we consider this the right hand side, OI and OJ are being different, the row and column of this matrix. This is a positive semidefinite matrix. And most of the times, we could assume that the system has a gap, starting from so there's no state between the ground state and some E gap, and depending on that value of E gap, if we take it too large, then positivity can be used to exclude such assumptions and only allow gaps that are small enough. So basically, that's how it works. And moreover, this complete set of this spectral decomposition setup can be taken as a generalization of this perturbative positivity that we use to isolate the ground state. Because this is basically just like keeping the right-hand side, so basically throwing away all of the states on the right-hand side, and then we'll have like this inequality. Yeah. For those who are familiar with the conformal bootstrap, this is this setup is actually kind of similar or analogous to the conformal bootstrap, in the sense that we're just studying like some crossing symmetry between, say, like either we operate operators on operators first and then take the expectation value, or we operate operator on the state first and then study the infinite set of state that that this operator can excite the ground state to. And we'll have OPE coefficients that are given by the, or so-called OPE coefficients given by the off-diagonal matrix elements between, say, the ground state and some general excited states. But this is just an analogy. So now let's briefly revisit the old unharmonic oscillator problem and see what this new setup can give us. So now we just like use, again, the powers of x. And we take, like, on one hand, we take x to the I times x times j, which gives them the xi plus j, and we take the expectation value of it on the ground state. And on the other hand, we have, like, the infinite sum of quadratic forms of off-diagonal matrix elements of x to some power between the ground state and kth excited state. And recall that for the diagonal matrix element of some operator, we have equational motions that can give us recursion relations that solves most of the unknowns. And here, for the off-diagonal matrix elements, there are analogous equations that also solves everything but two matrix elements. One is the X matrix element, the other one is the X squared matrix element. And then the coefficients generally depend on the energy of the bra and the ket, and the operator itself. And these are completely known given the energy. So now we have a sum over quadratic forms of these unknown matrix elements is equal to zero. And for those who are familiar with conformal bootstrap, this is how we use the crossing equation. We prove by contradiction. So we're given by a bunch of these equations, something quadratic sums to zero. And if we can massage these equations and take some specific linear combination of these equations such that on one side it's zero, on the other side is something strictly positive for all possible E that can come in the spectral decomposition, then we rule out, then we get a contradiction. And we rule out the entire spectrum. And we can just like change, we rule out this gap value. And we can just change the energy gap until we find that is allowed. So this is roughly how it works. And we use the semi-definite programming to achieve, to do the numerics. And then we have the result. So basically, For this specific Hamiltonian that we deliberately made to have like a two nearly degenerate grounds, nearly degenerate energy levels, E0 and E1. If we use the matrix bootstrap we talked about in the beginning, just requiring the positivity of the moment matrix, the bound actually doesn't know that E1 and E0 are different until k is as big as 18. But then for this new setup, it drastically improved in the bound to the level that at k is equal to 10, we have like, we can basically be as accurate as 1 part in 1,000 for both energy eigenvalues. And for stupid reason, there's no lower bound in E1, just because the setup for a single matrix element spectral decomposition only gives us an upper bound on the E1. And then if we want to get the lower bound, we can study what is analogous to the mixed correlator system in the conformal bootstrap. And here, this analogy is that we include a spectral decomposition of the matrix element of xx plus j between the zero, the ground state and the first excitation, and between the first excitation. And we triple the number of crossing equations, and we'll have like a kind of like larger quadratic form. But then we repeat roughly the same procedure, now we get the island. And this island is 10 to the minus 8 on all directions at the truncation k is equal to 8. So at least for this quantum mechanical problem, it's it behaves pretty well. And we get much better bound than just looking at the moment problem. And finally, for the infinite chain, so I'll not talk about like the complicated setup, but I'll just say that the setup is like what we talked about before, right? So we take some local operators. Well, there's no NPO business, because by the time we were writing that paper, we didn't know that setup yet. So just some local operators. And we use the Hamiltonian equation of motion to some truncation. And we use the crossing equations, or the spectral decomposition equations. And we get upper bound on the gap. And the upper bound seems to be improving as we increase the truncation, and seems to be getting closer to the exact solution. But using the local operators, we're not really expecting to get very good bounds. So an open question is like, can we improve this using, say, like NPO or any smart variational ansatz? Anything will be, anything is possible. We can just test. Yeah, but I'd like to emphasize the significance of this result is that we get a bound on the gap in the thermodynamic limit without any approximation. And maybe there is some assumption that the thermodynamic limit exists, but not assumption saying this parameter has to be in that range, these kind of things. So it's a clean result using this simple and intuitive method, which can hopefully be optimize in the future. Okay, so now let's conclude. We have found that Bootstrap is a useful tool to study quantum mechanics with infinite degrees of freedom. It gives us bound in the IR solution rigorously, and this bound also knows about all its UV constraints. We have a working setup to bound, say, the ground state energy, expectation value, and the gap. And we also saw that the relaxation based on variational method can drastically reduce the cost and give us much better bounds. But so far, we're still working on more general setup that combines the bootstrap with different variational ansatz and try to keep the equation of motion so that we can use them to like isolate the ground state or get the gap. Yeah. Right. Thank you very much.
Any further questions?
just to understand. So when you insert this set of states inside the expectation, you get basically like the OP in the conformal model. Right? Then you're like a sum.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this sum, for instance, I guess for the harmonic oscillator is under control. But in other cases, do you expect the torus of this sum would be in control, for instance, for spin chains?
Well, it's like a, it's a formal infinite sum of all possible states that can exist. But in the end, all we're asking is how it, like, so basically, without any knowledge of these states, we'll just say the right-hand side is a positive matrix. That we can say. And all the matrix elements, taking OI and OJ to be different, are independent. We can, and we need to scan all of them. But then using some equation, saying taking the Hamiltonian commuting with OI and give us OJ, something like that. And that thing generally gives us some reduction of these, some linear relationship between some matrix elements, some other matrix elements with coefficient proportional to E. And if we use a lot of these, then we get a matrix with reduced dimension, but some but with dependence on the E that runs in the sum. So it's like we don't have any control of what's in the sum. But the worst scenario is that we get a matrix that's completely independent. Yeah.
If there are no